This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 137, where we talk to Taylor Brown about virtualization and Windows containers, recorded live June 29th, 2016. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, the competitive landscape, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Connell.
Send us a tweet either to the show at MS Cloud Show or to Chris at LoungeflyZ.
Or to Andrew at Andrew Connell.
As we'd love to connect with you. We're just two dudes telling you how we see it. The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid is a Microsoft Gold partner whose mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of technology. Valid is always on the lookout for consultants, architects, and engineers. Do you know Azure, BI, and Analytics, .NET, Office 365, or SharePoint? Look them up on Valid.nl. All right. Good morning, everyone. This is another episode of the Microsoft Cloud Show. You're stuck with me, host Chris Johnson. AC is out at a conference in Boston, and you'll hear a little bit from him in the interview that we have coming up in this show. But for now, unfortunately, it's just me, I'm sorry. But fortunately, we have a really exciting show in store for you today. If you've been a regular listener of the Microsoft Cloud Show, you may be familiar with the fact that AC and I are extremely interested and bullish about this move towards application development and DevOps around containerization of applications. And in particular, Docker and how you can run and build or build and run both in development environments and stage environments and production applications in a containerized format and how exciting that is for the application development world. Now, this is something that you probably heard us talk about, but may have shrugged off as a meh, this is not a thing for me just yet because we live in a purely Microsoft development world. And to be honest, that's a fair call. Up to date, containers have been mostly Linux-based. You've had to run a virtual machine with a Linux distribution running to run containers. It's been specifically a Linux-only technology, or at least the very popular version has been a Linux-only technology for a little while. But that's changing. And as we heard at DockerCon last week, or the week before now, there were some announcements from Microsoft about containerization technology coming to the Microsoft, and in particular, the Windows world. And so what we thought we'd do is invite somebody from Microsoft on the show to talk about that. And Taylor Brown was very kind to come on the show and discuss it with us. And I loved this interview. I thought it was really interesting to get Microsoft's take on how they're approaching this. I do think that there's this wave coming that Microsoft ecosystem developers and IT professionals are not up to speed with just yet, because it's not been in their wheelhouse for a little while. But containerization is coming. I think it drastically improves the way we build and run applications. And I've really enjoyed building Hyperfish around in a fully containerized format. It's certainly helped us tremendously. And I feel extremely bullish about that coming to enterprise developers and folks building enterprise applications for their organization. And I think the move to Microsoft Windows containers is really the first step towards realizing that ability to build containerized apps for enterprise developers in a really big way. So I think it's super important. Like I said, I think the wave is coming. I feel there aren't a lot of people that are completely up to speed with the technology. And you've probably listened to some of our shows and gone, what are these guys talking about? Which is totally fair. And so, but I feel like that wave is coming and it's going to crash very shortly on the Microsoft app dev world. And so having Taylor on the show, I think, is a great step forward for helping our audience come up to speed with what's going on in the Windows container world. And Microsoft aren't doing this on their own. So in the interview, you'll hear from Taylor about the work that they're doing with Docker and the rest of the container ecosystem to really make sure that they're not doing something super proprietary or specific just to Microsoft. So they're participating in the rest of the community and being good sort of citizens in that regard. So like I said, at DockerCon last week, there were a few announcements. We talked about Mark Rusinovich doing his demo with Azure Stack and running the Docker data center product in Azure in a hybrid manner. We also saw him demo some Windows container work, and obviously we're going to dive into that with Taylor. But like I said, I really do think this is the wave coming that I certainly wasn't up to speed with until I started building a containerized application, and now I just couldn't imagine doing it any differently right now. So we're going to dive into this interview in a second. We cover all sorts of stuff with Taylor: open source world, developing with containers, Docker and participating with collaborating with Docker on bringing Windows containers to the world. What does it all mean for enterprise developers? The history of virtualization at Microsoft. And Taylor has been involved in this space for a long time, so is extremely well-versed in all of these technologies, and we're very lucky to have him on the show. So without further ado, Taylor Brown. Okay, well, welcome Taylor Brown to the show. Taylor is a principal lead program manager in the Windows and Devices division at Microsoft, who's been deeply focused on virtualization technologies, everything from virtual PC to virtual server and Hyper-V, and now on to the work that they're doing in Windows Container Land. He's an industry expert in virtualization technology. So Taylor, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So why don't we start off by giving us a quick overview on who you are and what you work on and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I'm Taylor Brown. I'm the lead program manager for our Windows container technologies in the Windows division. So anything that's server container related coming out of Windows, it falls under my team. I've been at Microsoft going on 15 plus years now in and around Microsoft. I actually started out selling computer hardware to Microsoft when I was still going to college. And then got hooked into the Windows division and started working on 1394 FireWire for a little while.
Yeah.
And then I worked on power management for a while. And then I had a great opportunity to go work on the Microsoft smartwatch, which was a fun project, a little ahead of its time.
Spot, correct?
Yeah,
Spot.
Yep. Yeah. So I worked on the entire back end and web front end for Spot for a while. And then saw a presentation by a company called ConnectX that was building virtual machine technology. And then shortly thereafter, Microsoft acquired ConnectX, and I jumped at the opportunity to join the newly formed Windows virtualization team and go work on virtualization technologies.
Gotcha. So the ConnectX stuff, that was what ultimately became Microsoft Virtual PC and then on to all of the other Microsoft virtualization products we've seen over the last, I guess, 10 years now or so, right?
Yeah, it started out with a virtual PC, and then we built a virtual server. Then from virtual server, we did a couple releases of that. I worked on networking and storage and part of the API service for that. Then went on to start working on Hyper-V, which was really a ground-up rebuild of the virtualization technology based on hypervisor technology. So utilizing the underlying platform, the virtualization extensions that were being built into the silicon to make virtual machines faster, more secure, more dense, all of those kind of wonderful things. And since then, I've been part of the Hyper-V team working on various virtual machine technologies until we started working on containers a couple of years back. And I jumped at the opportunity again to kind of lead and form the container team under the umbrella of the Hyper-V team and work on containers.
Gotcha. Yeah, a lot of our listeners come from a SharePoint background. AC and I have done a lot of work on SharePoint over the years, and one of the things as a developer in SharePoint is you get very good at figuring out how to run these large resource hungry virtual machines on relatively small dev workstations. And so we've all been through the journey of the various different virtualization technologies from Microsoft and sort of bending physics, if you will, to get these SharePoint VMs running on our desktops and on our demo laptops and all that sort of stuff. And sometimes multiple talking to each other, others just, you know, monolithic virtual machines. So I think our listeners will be very familiar with, you know, virtual PC, virtual server, and Hyper-V, and they've probably worked on them over the last few years. But why don't you tell us a little bit about the journey of virtualization at Microsoft and kind of where we're at today and where we're heading with some of these new virtualization technologies?
Yeah, definitely. I've worked on every virtualization solution that Microsoft has shipped, and that's generally true. It actually turns out that, you know, really virtualization, I kind of describe it as the web of lies that that we get to tell applications and platforms. And really, it kind of goes back, you know, way further back to the DOS days when we did virtual memory and, you know, page files and all of those kind of things, which obviously I wasn't a part of. Those were before my time. But those were forms of virtualization that existed in the operating system. Where we've been focused for the last number of years was on building virtual machines, where we're emulating or pretending to be a set of hardware that we can install different versions of Windows on, versions of Linux, really anything that can run on an x86 hardware machine, we can run inside of a virtual machine. And that's been a great area. We've had tremendous success with customers being able to take, you know, thousands of servers and push them into, you know, dozens of smaller servers and then move them into the cloud with things like Azure. But, you know, there's still opportunities for additional enhancements there. And that's really where containers have kind of come into play, as a form of OS virtualization, where we're pretending to be a clean copy of the operating system so that applications that are running on there have no understanding or no notion that they're running side by side with another application. They think they're on a clean copy of Windows Server 2016. They don't see any other processes running there, so they're happy. But we get the same kind of wins that we did for virtual machines, the ability to consolidate many, many more applications on a server, the enhancements in the ability to transit and transport these applications. So just like it got so much easier to give someone a VHD and say, here, fire up that VM, here's the VHD from it. Now I can give you a container image and say, hey, fire up that container and, you know, send that around the world 10 times over before the VHD's even finished downloading.
Gotcha. So it's a much more lighter weight construct. It's not quite as, you're not booting up an entire fully isolated environment just for that application, with everything that goes along with that, with all of Windows and the you know, the whole nine yards. It's a much more sort of stripped down, lightweight approach to that, with shared components between the underlying system and your container.
Right. I mean, so we've got one kernel, so we're running a single kernel. We do start up a number of the same system services in each container, and we do that so that each container thinks it's got its own user groups, it thinks it's got its own WMI instances and all of those things. But even then, we're only cloning, kind of, we're only starting up the private memory. So all the common memory is shared between them. So we get much higher density, you know, startup times in, that are measured in seconds and even sub-seconds, as compared to, you know, minutes for VM to boot up.
Yeah, so just enough to make them feel special, but not too much that it takes too long to get things started.
Right, I allude to the just enough virtualization. So
right.
Theme of the last year or so: just enough OS, just enough administration, just enough virtualization. But it is kind of a true construct, right? Where you're trying to eliminate the amount of additional kind of duplicate overhead that you have for as many areas as possible, and by doing that, you get things to be more and more and more agile.
Gotcha. So some of the underlying technology that goes into running containers, as I understand it, goes back quite a ways, and that this is not a brand spanking new concept or technology, but it obviously is to Windows. But some of these constructs go back some time to either the late 70s or early 80s, in some cases with Linux and Unix and things. Would you mind digging into a little bit about how you've brought those to Windows and how some of those concepts map between the two?
Yeah, I mean, so the current evolution of containers, and it's kind of interesting to think about OS architecture. If you really look back in the rearview mirror, we've come full circle many times, going from mainframes, shared mainframes, to, you know, single workstations, back to larger servers. And each time we go to these larger servers, we end up inventing new virtualization technologies so that we can run multiple things on them. And, you know, the current wave of that in Linux land is containers. And so 8-10 years ago, independently, IBM did some work called namespaces, and Google did some work for a technology called C groups, with a goal of being able to run small applications isolated on larger servers. So in the case of IBM, you know, we've got big mainframes. Gee, it's really nice if we can run a lot of things on there. We'll sell more mainframes. In the case of Google, being able to build these kind of amazingly distributed applications and kind of isolate them together, you know, is very beneficial. And we've certainly found that with our clouds as well, Bing and Cortana and these kind of things. We've built similar, you know, ways to do that. But the problem with with the way that these were implemented in Linux is that they were really relegated to kind of the unicorns. You know, if you were a big company, Microsoft or Google or a large cloud company, yeah, you could build some really cool services using these isolation technologies because you can be highly prescriptive. You could tell your developers, this is how you're going to build your app. You're going to use these frameworks on these tools, and this is the way you're going to do it, and then we can run them at scale.
Mm.
What's happened in the last couple of years is that Docker came around and kind of made this accessible to all. They kind of did the Henry Ford of containers. They made a model that is common across every person. Anybody who can sit down and build a container now, it's going to look like a container. It's going to be black. It's going to have four wheels. It's going to have an engine. But gee, it's pretty nice that it can get gas at every gas station and it can run on all these different platforms. And so to the genesis of your question, what have we done in Windows? Well, it turns out, you know, if you look at OS architecture, you know, kernel architecture is very, very similar across most kernels. If you sit down with kernel devs, they end up building very, very similar things, even if they're not talking to each other.
Mm.
And there's, you know, there's some architectural reasons for that, but the ability to group processes together, which is really what C groups are, is a ability to kind of group these things together and apply rules around them. Windows has had that in the kernel since in T4. We called it a job object.
Hmm, I see.
And Windows has had a notion of namespaces since the very beginning of NT, you know, even back before NT4 into the 3.5 days, called the object namespace, or OB if you're a Windows kernel dever. What we didn't have was the ability to kind of virtualize that OB namespace. And our job objects didn't have some of the capabilities that were really needed to make them comparable to C groups in Linux. And so over the last 2 years, a big portion of my team has been off working on implementing those kind of constructs, building out the job object support and then building in virtualization into the object namespace and other namespaces around Windows.
Gotcha. I see. So there's a bunch of mapping going on between there to make sure that you had, you know, the right sort of support in the kernel of Windows to support some of these constructs, make sure that they were sort of one for one in many ways, and so that you could run containers. But as I understand it, that's, you also needed to do work in Docker Engine to be able to run these containers on Windows. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, so the, you know, Docker Engine is, it's a container tool set. It's a management tool set. It's, you know, it's what's responsible for calling these underlying you know, OS primitives.
Mm.
And, you know, we certainly could have gone off and built a proprietary one, but what, you know, we found from customers is they really loved the Docker tooling. And so instead of going down that approach, we actually went and worked in the Docker community and in open source and taught the Docker Engine how to talk to Windows in the same way that it talks to Linux, such that it's now just a cross-compile of the Docker Engine for Windows or Linux.
Gotcha. That's, yeah, I see. So you, it's the same Docker Engine. It's developed out in the open by community, and really sort of making sure it had the right hooks to call the, you know, APIs that were specific to Windows versus the APIs that would be specific to Linux to get these things running.
We effectively were able to go work with that community. It's been a great community to work with to make Docker kind of common across Linux and Windows. It's the unifier of the // argument. You may prefer one or the other, but a Docker image can have both.
Gotcha.
And, you know, it's the same REST interface, it's the same CLI, it's the same runtime, whether you're using it on an Ubuntu server, a Red Hat server, or a Windows Server 2016 box.
Gotcha. So Docker is a company, right? It's a for-profit organization that builds a bunch of tools that they sell, as well as some that they give away. And so one of those tools is Docker Engine, which is the piece that we're talking about running containers and orchestrating that. So you're saying Microsoft contributes to that project. Did Docker do some of the work, or did you guys have to go do all of the work yourselves? How did that happen?
Yeah, I mean, so you mentioned Docker. Docker Inc., Docker Incorporated, is kind of the commercial arm of the Docker project. So this started out, it actually started as a company called .cloud, and .cloud was a SaaS, PaaS provider that had a lot of the challenges that we're talking about. It was hard to run software from customers. It was hard running at scale. So they invented this tool. They called it Docker internally. And it turned out that the tool was far more valuable than the platform that they had been building as .cloud. So they and they'd been building this tool in the open source already. And so they decided, you know, we're going to double down on this Docker thing. They formalized the Docker engine and the Docker project as an independent project. It's an open source project. You can go to dockerproject.org. Mm. And the CTO of Docker Incorporated is one of the core maintainers of the Docker project. But then they spun up the Docker business unit, Docker Inc., to, as you said, build tools that kind of ride on top of that, support agreements around it, end-to-end tooling, and provide additional value on top of the project.
Gotcha.
And so we're involved with both sides of it. We're involved with the Docker project as we contribute code into it. And so we've been the number two contributor to the Docker project over the last year corporately, where Docker Inc. is the first one. So people who work for a corporation contributing to the project, then Microsoft being the second one. And we now have a maintainer from Microsoft, a gentleman named John Howard, who's a maintainer of the Docker project while also being a Microsoft employee.
Gotcha.
I mean, that says quite a bit too, because I mean, if I'm not mistaken, that the work that's being done by Microsoft on Docker, that's all being done from the Windows division.
Yeah, you know, we've got people contributing from Azure and other places too, but the amount of code that the Windows-based division, the kernel team in Windows, been able to contribute to the open source Docker project over the last year is substantial. And certainly, if I, 3 years ago, sitting in my office, I would have not thought that Microsoft would be contributing. certainly not my division, the base kernel division, would be contributing to open source projects in the way that we are and to the rate and level that we are. So it's been a very, you know, substantial and beneficial shift to see in our company strategy as we've been able to go work with these communities on developing really great technology and tools for everyone.
Excellent.
That was kind of what I was trying to get to. It's just amazing to me that, I mean, just thinking back that something that was been so incredibly core to Microsoft and as being such a proprietary thing, but this is the division that is making this possible, contributing to open source, to making this work. It's absolutely fascinating to me, and it's got to give a lot of enterprises too a lot of comfort, not just in picking Docker, but more from really being able to buy into this whole notion of building container or building applications as like in containerized applications and adopting this technology in their organization. I mean, we've always had, you know, like you said, with Docker being around, being on top of Linux. I mean, it's with it now being such a cross-platform thing, I mean, it's got to give a lot more warm fuzzies to CTOs that are trying to make this decision on which direction they should go for their future architecture.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that, you know, that I was really inspired by and saw a lot of value in is that, you know, we had a scenario that was unfolding where customers, developers in particular, were having to choose the platform for their entire application based on what tools were available. And so in some cases, Linux has tools and platforms that are just, you know, far superior for some elements than what exists on Windows. And then the same is true the other direction. There are parts of Windows that are, you know, far ahead for specific goals than what exists on Linux. But they were being put in a bad position of choosing Linux or Windows for their application. Mm. With containers and the common approach across them, that removes a lot of that choice from them. Now they can build an application that may use, you know, something like a Redis backend running in a Linux container with a ASP.NET application running on IIS as the front end. And those can both be Docker containers. They can live and be managed in a common way. One of them is going to run on a Linux server. One of them is going to run on a Windows server. But the API, the image format, all of that is common across both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to build with the best tools for their job now, as opposed to, you know, having to choose and make the compromise between the tool sets.
Yeah, in some ways, I also think that people are going to have to think pretty hard about this, because, you know, a lot of organizations that I've worked with and worked for in the past have sort of had a set of standardized things that they just use, and you don't really get a choice. But this also gives you more choices in terms of, well, now do we have to go do should we go do some Linux containers for a specific scenario where it makes sense? And do we go do some Windows containers where it makes sense for various scenarios and mixing and matching? And some of those choices weren't even a thing or aren't a thing today in many organizations, just because it's sort of a prescribed for them by the standards of the company. So I imagine those are going to have to evolve pretty rapidly as well to take advantage of this new technology.
Right. And you're going to have like companies that sit down when you want to make those decisions, right? You immediately are eliminating a huge set of options that just because you're going to pick what the platform is, and it's just so going in one direction eliminates so much. But I mean, mm-hmm. as we've seen, not only with this, but with a lot of the other stuff too, that the news that from out of Microsoft and other companies recently that, you know, you see things like, say, you know, SQL Server has always been a Windows thing. And now you're going to have the option of, where do I want to run SQL Server? You know, do I want to run that in Linux? Do I want to run that in Windows? Not, again, that's not so much about the whole Docker and container piece, but just because that things are being made so much more cross-platform to give people these options. And one, I mean, all these options are great. It's going to also like confuse many people too, because you can have not just sitting down and working on a particular scenario and different options, but you're going to have, as say, an entire application. You may have different pieces of that application running Linux. Different pieces are running Windows. Just getting the best of breed that's available to you.
Yeah, I mean, we've started to see this in the worst possible way. Well, we've been seeing it in the worst possible way for a couple of years with the rise of kind of the shadow IT, right? Mm-hmm. So companies were telling their development teams, no, you have to use, this is going to be a .NET 3.5 application that's going to run on, you know, Windows 2012 R2. That's the way we're going to build stuff. And, you know, the development manager would go swipe his corporate Amex with, you know, some cloud provider and spin it all up in Linux on the cloud and say, well, it's done. Here's the application. Now you just need to run it that way, right? And we look at it from an IT perspective and we go, wow, you know, how does that happen? Well, the demands of delivering applications at a rapid rate now erase the previous kind of, well, there's a corporate policy for it. You know, when we have to deliver an application update every month, they got creative. They found ways to meet those requirements. And a lot of times that was going around IT. And that has consequences, right? We lose our regulation abilities. We lose the auditing capabilities. We lose a lot of the things that we hold as core and principle. What this is allowing us to now do is to regain those while still maintaining and actually improving the flexibility and the ability to deliver on the business requirements in a more rapid way.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% correct. And although this will be a difficult pill for people to swallow and a bit of a learning curve, I think, you know, overall it's going to be better off for everybody once they get up to speed on all their options available and what containers can do for them. So, but like I said, I think it'll take a little while for people to fully get up to speed with these new concepts.
It's been fairly impressive to see already with the previews that we have out, how fast some very large organizations are already adopting and moving to Windows containers, and how fast they're able to do it. I was just working with a team internally that has been working on a proof of concept, and it took them less than a week to have a full proof of concept running in Windows containers from their existing .NET application.
Gotcha. Yeah, I guess not having to entirely rewrite things is certainly going to help. And it's more of a packaging decision and an ops decision to get these, where they run them and how they run them and things. But you don't have to completely retool and switch platforms and all that sort of stuff, which is really nice. Yeah. So we've heard a little bit about a couple of terms, Hyper-V containers and Windows containers. Would you mind diving into a little bit about the difference of the two and when one might choose one over the other?
Definitely. I mean, I think Hyper-V containers is one of the areas that we've made some really cool platform innovation while maintaining the common tool set. It's one of those things where I can say, yeah, that's a reason to run Windows Server because we have this technology. And so as we talked about like C groups and namespaces earlier, those are the foundations of our Windows Server container runtime. Those are the things that we use for running Windows Server containers. So it's very similar to a Linux container in its approach. When we started building containers, we had two sets of requirements coming in. We had requirements from customers that said, wow, this Linux stuff's kind of neat. We're seeing some benefits from it. We'd like to do the same thing for Windows. And then at the same time, we had some requirements coming in from teams inside of Azure, specifically teams like Azure Automation and Machine Learning, which are running code on the behalf of a customer. So a customer gives them PowerShell script or a module or an R script or things like that, and they run them on behalf of that customer. And the risk there is that, you know, we'd love to think all of our customers are upstanding, honest people, but the reality of the world is that not everybody's like that. And so running this custom code or provided code has an innate risk in it. And so we have to isolate that so that they can do no harm to anybody other than themselves. And the technology that's really available for that is virtual machines today. That's the one that provides us the level of isolation that we think is sufficient to protect all of our customers on Azure. And so their need was for something that provided that same level of isolation, but at a much higher density and a much faster startup time. And so we kind of thought, well, it sounds an awful lot like a container, but a container that has this measured isolation level. And so as we sat down and kind of imagined the approach to solving these two problems, we decided what we really needed to do is build two container runtimes, one called Windows Server Containers and then the second called Hyper-V Containers. But we didn't want people to have to build two different container images. We wanted to give them all the flexibility, and we wanted the tool set to be common across both of them. And so the way that we actually ended up implementing Hyper-V Containers is that it's a special virtual machine that we built for no other purpose than to run a container, and a special installation of Windows with no purpose other than to run a container. And then we run exactly one container inside of each one of these special virtual machines and special installations of Windows. And it's a Windows Server container that's running inside of it. Now, in order to get the density and startup time that containers have, and in order to kind of keep the promise of a container, we invented a bunch of other technologies based on this special virtual machine. So we talked to Dr. Hanan for the first time about clone, or our ability to make a copy of the running virtual machine before it's actually started this container inside of it, so that we can use that as the seed for all future Hyper-V containers to start up.
Interesting.
We talked about some of the memory sharing technology there as well, and our ability to share mapped images and memory across these containers to improve their density. And so we've actually been able to see some amazing gains in the Hyper-V container space while still preserving the full isolation that that a VM had. You know, so when we talk about VMs and we think about, you know, startup times in the minutes range, Hyper-V containers is measured in the seconds range, you know, sub 10 second startup time, even with fairly large images. And we think that that's a pretty innovative technology, and it allows a lot of choice for customers. So if you're a developer running Windows 10, you can now run Hyper-V containers there, which gives you the exact same kernel and the exact same configuration as what's going to run in production on Windows Server. When that container image goes into production, the operations team has a choice. They can run it as a Windows Server container, get a little bit higher density, a little faster startup time, or if they need the higher isolation, so maybe they're running in a regulated industry, HIPAA, FIPS, PCI, one of those kind of arenas, then they can run with Hyper-V containers and get that same VM level of isolation that they've expected previously.
Gotcha. So I think the similarity here, or at least the concept, seems quite similar to how I would run today. I would run Docker on my Mac. Is it's really connecting to an underlying virtual machine that's running my containers, and it sounds very similar on Windows 10. You'd be running a Hyper-V virtual machine, a very lightweight virtual machine, mind you, that's really running all your containers, and you're really connecting to that and running your containers there. Is that accurate?
Well, it's actually a little bit more than that. So we don't even call this a virtual machine. I mean, underlying technically it is. But if you look in like Hyper-V Manager, you'll never see it.
And
we actually run one container per virtual machine. And the reason we do that is so that each application, each container is fully isolated from everything else.
I see.
And because we've got all this memory sharing and clone technology, the impact of doing that is actually fairly small.
Gotcha. Okay.
But you still have the same capabilities that we have like within Docker, being able to create like an overlay network across all the machines, even though the containers are really in their own separate machines. With the Hyper-V containers, they're still seen, like from someone who's familiar with containers, it's still the same concept.
Yep, very much so. And so in fact, we've implemented a lib network driver so that all the networking options, or a lot of the networking options in Docker, light up automatically with Windows containers. And that's an area that just to be upfront, we've got some work that we're still doing around networking and continuing to build on the overlay networking technology and concepts, but it's work we're really committed to seeing through and continuing to work on and lighting up.
Yeah, that's excellent.
So then just to make sure that the listeners are going to understand this, then if they wanted to go build Windows containers that are based off Windows containers or Hyper-V Core, Hyper-V containers, then they're going to have a Windows 10 on their Surface Book or whatever. They're going to go enable Hyper-V on their machine. And then from there, they'll be able to start just immediately going through and creating containers by having Docker installed. And it's going to be the same kind of using the same kind of client type commands at the command line that they would be used to doing, or that they would be doing if they were doing, say, Linux containers using like the tools that we have today with like, say, Docker for Mac or Docker for Windows.
Yep, exactly. And so we've actually got some setup instructions if you're part of the Windows 10 Insider program now, where you can actually start previewing Hyper-V containers on Windows 10. And it's exactly that. You enable the containers role and the Hyper-V role. You install the Docker engine and you start creating Docker containers. The default automatically switches over to being a Hyper-V container. The container images you create are portable to a Server 2016 machine that's running TP5 or Technical Preview 5. So you can even start to do that prototyping and building things out. And as I mentioned, some of these early customers that are moving on to this, that's exactly what they're starting to do. They're taking their existing apps, they're moving them into containers on their desktop. They're pushing them into, you know, validation, pre-production environments as container images, and then running them on TP5 and seeing some pretty great results.
That's very cool. So when they go about doing this, I mean, this is, they're not going to need to go install an extra, other than the Docker machine, they're not going to need to go get, say, the client tools that we have today, the Docker for Windows, to install it on Windows to be able to go do all that work. They'll just be able to just start working straight, just having Docker machine installed, and they'll be off to the races once they've enabled this role.
They just need, actually, the Docker engine is really all they need.
The Docker engine, okay.
Yeah. Now, what we are working on is we're working on making Docker for Windows, and this is part of that vision of use the best tools. So the Docker for Windows that today creates that Linux VM and does all that, the next wave of that we want and this is a kind of a goal that really Docker is working on foremost, so that actually will configure your machine to run Windows containers as well. So you run Docker for Windows, you can now create containers and run containers based on any platform you want, Linux or Windows.
Wow, okay. That's fantastic. That will mean, that'll be a big step up or a big pro for developers working on Windows, right? Because in the Mac world, there'll be, or Linux world, I should say, you know, they'll be building containers and only being able to build Linux containers. But if I'm a developer on Windows now, I'm going to be able to build Windows containers or Linux containers and have them all talking together, the same swarm on my machine, all that sort of stuff. So a real heterogeneous environment.
Well, to the true new Microsoft world, even on Linux machines and on Macs, we're starting to experiment and try to figure out how do we enable them to start up a Windows virtual machine running something like NanoServer. So that even on those platforms, you know, even if you're, you know, identified with a Mac and you love your Mac, doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to build great Windows container applications to run on servers.
Wow, that'd be fantastic.
My head just exploded.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the next question where I was going to go is that, I mean, if that's the direction you're going, then, you know, let's just, you know, think way down the line here. Then is there really any technical reason why, or is there any reason today why we should not at least think that it's possible that if I install Docker for Mac or Docker for Windows, then when I go to first fire it up, and today what it does is it boots up that mini little VM in the background, that now when I start it up, it's kind of going to give me a prompt and say, what do you want to do? Do you want to do Windows or do you want to do Linux?
How about we remove that prompt from you even? So the work that we're doing with the Docker Hub means that the images self-describe.
Oh my God, my head just, I can't explode more than once in the show. That's really cool. So another question then, and I know that I'm the classic developer, so this is the one question I try and stay away from everything. So if it's not appropriate or it doesn't make sense in the scenario, we can definitely punt it. But one of the questions that kind of comes up with me in this, because it's Windows, is around licensing. So on the container side, is it correct to say that the license is really going to be applying at the host OS level? It's not going to be, it's not like a virtual machine where I have the host OS has a license and the virtual machine has a license. And the container, does that also need to have a license, or is that something I need to be concerned with?
No, so the approach that we took towards licensing this was to exactly to your point, look at the host. So if you're running the standard edition of Windows Server, then you can run unlimited Windows Server containers on there. You can, your license run two Hyper-V containers, just like you could run two VMs. And if you wanted to stack licenses, you could do that. If you're running the Data Center Edition, which is certainly the most popular, you know, edition for a lot of enterprises, then you just get unlimited everything. You can run as many containers on there of either Hyper-V or Windows Server. You can run as many Windows VMs on there. You can run your Linux VMs on there. You know, it really makes that accounting, that choice very easy for the IT department. You just license the server and away you go. And then for a developer, you know, I don't have to worry about, boy, am I going to, you know, set my company up for, you know, having to pay for extra licenses because I built an extra container. No, that's not a choice we wanted to have people make.
Gotcha.
Oh, this is incredible.
Yeah, that's really nice. I think that'll be amazing for developers to just install Docker for Mac or Windows and start building and not have to say, have a whole lot of decisions about, oh gosh, do I need a Mac to develop this on or a Windows box to develop this on? I know that I can do all of the things regardless of what laptop I happen to be carrying around.
Yeah, you almost get to, we've had this concept keep coming up about, you know, cross-platform based development and stuff. And so that's, you know, we have .NET Core now, we can do like Node.js or whatever language that's actually cross-platform. It's almost like once we see the implementation of all of these things we're talking about, granted, I know that some of the stuff we've talked about, like with Docker for Mac, and that some of that stuff is kind of pushed down the line. It's not what we're really looking at in the near term of Windows containers. But I mean, it really is more like, you know, it doesn't matter what platform you're on, we're going to bring the platform that you need for that scenario to you when you actually need it, instead of having to write something that will run on all the platforms. We'll just bring the platform to you.
It's all about removing choices, you know, false choices from developers, right? Like, as a developer, why should I have to worry about, you know, what platform I have to build on? And then from us as a platform company, giving people, you know, saying, hey, you can only develop for Windows if you're running Windows, that means that there's great applications that go undeveloped for Windows every day. And by removing that choice and saying, hey, no, build with whatever tool you want on whatever platform you're on, and it'll run in a great way on the Windows platforms and devices, and part of the universal platform, you build it once and runs everywhere, you know, you remove that impedance, you give people the flexibility to build amazing experiences that transcend the technology that it was built on and connect with more and more and more customers.
Wow. That's really cool.
So this has been out in technical preview for a little while. People are able to go play around with Windows Server 2016, run some Windows containers and Hyper-V containers and so forth. So it's been out in preview for a little while, and you mentioned that the uptick has been pretty reasonable in terms of companies looking at this and adopting it and starting to build apps. Are there a couple of examples you could give of things you've just sort of been blown away by with customers, or where you've thought, wow, that's really interesting, I hadn't thought about that, that's either driven improvements in the core platform or underlying infrastructure or technology, or just sort of like, wow, we just really didn't expect that?
I'm kind of blown away on a semi-regular basis now when I talk to customers. I mean, the first one is I'm always blown away at how fast they're able to adopt these technologies. Coming from years and years on the virtual machine side, it would take people a month or two to get the build downloaded, get it installed, start making some VMs, and start giving us feedback on it. We put out a new preview, and I've got customers the next couple of days saying, hey, we've moved our entire ASP.NET 4.5 app from Windows 2012 to containers, and we've got it up and running in pre-production already. And it's like, whoa, okay. You know, that's amazing. That's great. The level of scale that some of the customers are looking to run at continues to amaze me. When we first started and we started looking at what people were doing with containers, we found that, you know, running maybe 100 or 200 containers on a host was like, that was some scale. That was, you know, pushing it a little bit. Now I'm hearing people say, you know, hey, we're running, 700-800 already.
Oh my God.
Wow. And they're trying to push it further.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's certainly, in terms of enterprises, that's an extremely quick adoption cycle, right? I fully understand your comment there about, you know, it might take a couple of months to start kicking the tires, possibly up to a year before somebody will, you know, plan a rollout of a particular version of software. And I'm not naming names, SharePoint. And any enterprise adopting technology that quick, that's fantastic to see.
Yeah, we've got a number of customers are lining up for, gee, as soon as this is generally available, we're going to start production rollout.
Wow. That's really
yeah, that's great.
Is there anything that, as we're doing this stuff with, as we're looking at Windows containers, is there anything that developers should think about in terms of what the limits are? Like, for instance, is it too far to think that, you know, I can take, say, for instance, I could take SQL Server and I could run it on Windows and I could run it within a Windows container. Is there any reason why that, like, I shouldn't do that? I shouldn't be thinking along those lines?
So we've actually, the SQL team about 2 weeks ago published a SQL image for Windows Server containers already. So
never
it's available
mind.
If you just get it. Run Docker pull Microsoft/ SQL Server. You'll get SQL Server 2014 Express Edition, and we're working on the developer edition of 2016 now as well. So, you know, those kind of things are just, yeah, they're absolutely cornerstones of what people are doing with containers. You know, the biggest limitation that containers present, because they're a shared kernel model, is drivers. So if you've got an application that's built on drivers, which, you know, realistically, there's not, of the millions of applications that exist, applications that use drivers are a fairly small percentage of that. Those are kind of out of bounds for at least for now.
I see.
And, you know, we're finding that's not a big, big limitation for people.
No, I can't remember the last time I wrote a driver. It was a while
ago.
Excellent. Hey, so we have a mailing list, and we sent out an email to our listeners. If you're not on the list, obviously go to our site and sign up for those listening. But one of our listeners answered the call for questions. So we have a listener question that was sent in by Michael. I'm going to balk up his last name because there's lots of W's and C's and Z's in here. But I think it's Wysoric. Apologies if I get that wrong. But here's a question, and he says, Will there be next Technical Preview 6 or RTM? What new features can we expect? Will Microsoft be involved in scheduler projects to make it possible to run on Windows, things like Mesos, Kubernetes, Nomad, and is there any timeline for those things? So would you mind, obviously only what you can say on the show, but give us a little bit of a hint about where you're going with what's happening on Windows Server around technical previews and RTM, and then obviously the scheduler question there.
So as the name of Windows Server alludes to, Windows Server 2016, we're really focused on having that generally available this year. And so a lot of our efforts are focused around, you know, doing the polish, the final shine on Windows Server 2016 and getting it ready for general availability. And so the march is on towards that for this year. To the question around schedulers and whatnot, so we've already been working on Swarm, Kubernetes, and Mesosphere.
Oh, wow.
So Microsoft and Mesosphere or Mesos community announced at LinuxCon or ContainerCon last year. LinuxCon and ContainerCon are the same conference, but they're part of the same organization. We announced the work to start building Mesosphere for Windows Server. And that's been coming along steadily. And then in a couple months back now, the folks at Aprenda at KubeCon announced that they were going to spearhead the work to bring Kubernetes to Windows. And so there's actually a Windows SIG that you can sign up for. It's public. If you're interested in the kind of happenings there or contributing to it, I'm part of that SIG. We have a weekly call where we try to discuss progress around that. So that's work that's already going on. And then there's already an alpha of Swarm available. Swarm is literally just a cross-compile for Windows. There is now some ongoing work to do a little more on that. And then as Swarm moves into the Docker engine, as announced at DockerCon, that'll attribute to Windows automatically as just being part of the engine API.
Gotcha. So this will mean not only can you go build apps that are containerized and run on Windows, but you'll also be able to run these wider-scale systems for helping schedule your containers and orchestrate your containers and scale them up and down and run jobs on your farm and all that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. And we also announced at DockerCon that the Azure Container Service is in private preview with Windows support now.
Gotcha.
So you'll be able to create a Azure Container Service entity in Azure that's going to be running Windows as the OS backing it, and then you can run your Windows containers on that. And so even that is something you don't have to worry about. We'll take care of scaling it up and down for you.
Excellent. Well, there's a lot going on in the space. It's a lot for people to consume and things like that. But where would you suggest people go to get started, maybe kick the tires, play around with you know, a Hello World, ASP.NET Core app or something along those lines, just to sort of start learning about the world of containerization and how it might apply to them as a Microsoft familiar or ecosystem developer today.
Yeah, so all of our documentation is on aka.ms/containers. So http://aka.ms/containers. That'll redirect you to our documentation portal, which, by the way, is all backed in GitHub. As true to the spirit of this project. So if you don't like the way the docs look, you can submit a pull request and change them.
Excellent.
We invite you to do so. But that's got a great getting started guide for Server 2016, as well as Windows 10 if you're an insider and want to play with it on Windows 10. There's also a link on there to our forums if you've got feedback or questions. We do our best to get to as many of the forums posts as we can. Frankly, we're always a little overwhelmed with how many questions and things people have. So If you have answers, feel free to answer people's questions there too.
Excellent. AC, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
This has been very insightful. I thought I had an idea of what was going on, and I clearly just had the tip of the iceberg. So Taylor, I really do appreciate you coming on the show and sharing this with our listeners. I know that CJ and I have talked a good bit about this recently, and I happen to be at a conference. We talked a good bit about containers, but just Docker and containers for the most part over the last few months. And this week is the first opportunity I've had to be around some of the peers that I talk to on a constant basis in person at a conference this week. And I've gotten a bunch of questions from people about it, and just, you know, what's the big deal about it? Is this something I need to pay attention to? And I think that I know CJ and I have talked about this offline, but this concept of containers coming to Windows as a native construct is really going to enable a lot of scenarios. And it's something that developers are really going to want to pay attention to, even if you're, you know, just a traditional Microsoft Windows-based developer. I think that, you know, it's stuff that it's going to enable a lot of new scenarios and open up a lot of new options for you. And then to taking that even further is just, you know, letting the other side of the world that's not traditionally on Windows, opening up a lot of options for them as well. And this is really exciting. I really do appreciate you sharing this with our listeners.
I'm happy to do it. I love spreading the word because I agree with you. It's this is a transformative technology for a lot of people.
Yeah, I left Microsoft last year, and at the end of August, and the startup that I'm working at now, we're building all our back end in Node, and it's all containerized and all that sort of stuff. But it's really opened my eyes to a different way of building applications, and it really strikes me that very few people in the Microsoft development world are really paying that much attention to this just yet, but it's a wave that's coming, and I really think the opening up of the ecosystem on Windows will really sort of signal the start of that wave starting to crash, and people have a lot of learning to do, but it's really going to change the way they build applications for the better, and I'm very excited to see it coming to the ecosystem.
Was that a Game of Thrones reference? Containers are coming.
Inadvertently, maybe, yeah.
I might have to give that over to my marketing people.
containers are coming. Yeah. Yes. I look forward to getting a sticker at the next conference with that on it.
Yeah, you're on the Microsoft Cloud Show first.
Well, if your marketing people don't do it, let me know and I'll definitely do it for you. If you need to go out of band from the marketing folks, I'm happy to take that on. Well, Taylor, thank you again very much for coming on the show and taking some time out of your busy day to talk with us. We really do appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing all the new things coming in Windows Container World over the remainder of this year and onwards. So thanks again from all of us. And we look forward to talking with you again in the future at some point.
Sounds good. Look forward to it.
Cheers. Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes for each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to interact with us. Participate in upcoming interviews and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.